Okay, we're going to go to the book of Matthew this morning. Matthew chapter 23.
Uh-oh. Is that where you're at too?
Yeah. No. I mean, it's just, Matthew 23 is pretty rough.
Well, it's a lot of reading this morning. So, for those of you who don't like to read, it's going to be rough anyway. But there is a lot in this chapter, just in general. There's a lot in this chapter. But going along the principle of what we've been talking about, receiving truth, how you receive the truth, surrendering to the truth, and even the opposite of not surrendering to the truth, this chapter encapsulates a lot of what we're going to talk about today. And that's, I was reading it, and I was like, man, there's a lot in here, and I didn't really know how to break it down. But you can't just read one part, because it all kind of runs together. So we're going to read like 22 verses. So we're going to start in verse 1, and we're just going to go ahead and read chapter 23, verses 1 through 22. And it says, "Then spake Jesus to the multitude and to his disciples, saying, The scribes and the Pharisees sit in Moses' seat. All therefore, whatsoever they bid you observe, that observe and do. But do not ye after their works, for they say and do not. For they bind heavy burdens and grievous to be borne, and lay them on men's shoulders, but they themselves will not move them with one of their fingers. But all their works they do for to be seen of men. They make broad their
phylacteries,
that is a fun word, and enlarge the borders of their garments, and love the uppermost rooms at feasts and the chief seats in the synagogues, in greetings in the markets, and to be called of men Rabbi, Rabbi. But be not ye called Rabbi, for one is your master, even Christ, and all ye are brethren. And call no man your father upon the earth, for one is your Father which is in heaven. Neither be ye called masters, for one is your master, even Christ. But he that is greatest among you shall be your servant, and whosoever shall exalt himself shall be abased, and he that shall humble himself shall be exalted. But woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for ye shut up the kingdom of heaven against men, for ye neither go in yourselves, nor neither suffer ye them that are entering to go in. Woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for ye devour widows' houses, and for a pretense make long prayer. Therefore ye shall receive the greater damnation. Woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for ye compass sea and land to make one proselyte, and when he is made, ye make him twofold more the child of hell than yourselves. Woe unto you, ye blind guides, which say, Whosoever shall swear by the temple, it is nothing, but whosoever shall swear by the gold of the temple, he is a debtor. Ye fools and blind, for whether is greater, the gold or the temple that sanctifieth the gold? And whosoever shall swear by the altar, it is nothing, but whosoever sweareth by the gift that is upon it, he is guilty. Ye fools and blind, for whether is greater, the gift or the altar that sanctifieth the gift? Whoso therefore shall swear by the altar, sweareth by it, and by all things thereon. And whoso shall swear by the temple, sweareth by it, and by him that dwelleth therein. And he that shall swear by heaven, sweareth by the throne of God, and by him that sitteth thereon." And there is a lot more if you keep on reading there. They're accusations, but they're also just statements of fact of what the Pharisees and scribes were actually doing in that day. Because they had the truth. He starts out, if you notice in verses 1 through 3, he starts out and says, they sit in the seat of Moses. What they say is not wrong about that. He said, whatsoever they bid you observe, that observe and do. Because they are preaching the Bible. You know, they're preaching the books of Moses to the prophets. You know, he said, you observe and do them. But look at this aspect of it. Look at this aspect of it. The past few weeks, we've seen the reception of truth and surrendering to the truth and how that process should go. But what happens when you reject the truth? There's a lot of people in this world that take that route as well. And I hit on it a little bit last week, but we're going to kind of dig into it more. Usually, you know, there's someone running from the truth and his life goes, quote unquote, off the rail. And so when you say you reject the truth, you kind of envision that person abandoning church and every semblance of God in their life and they go on. But that's not always the case. In fact, it's more often the case the other way. The ones that have rejected the truth tend to cling to religion in one way, shape, or form in order to justify themselves. And today we're going to view a few signs of somebody that's rejected the truth. In verse 4, it talks about talking of heavy burdens but don't bear any themselves. And I have a little outline here to keep me on track because there's a lot to say. And we're just going to try and stay on track. I know I don't have much time today, but we're going to go for it. These people set very high standards for themselves and encourage very high participation in certain activities, such as church activities, soul winning operations, bus routes, everything like that. They tend to put high priority on these things and they talk very highly of it. In fact, one guy in particular comes to mind in a church we went to for a few years, and he was, and this is probably not the best way to talk about people, but we called him the preacher's yes man, because that's all he would do. In all the sermons, what you heard was him laughing at his jokes and amening absolutely everything, whether it required an amen or not. This person in particular was a retired Navy SEAL who decided it was probably better for him to go to church than it would for him to live any other, I guess, any other way in particular. Because his testimony was a chaplain came in to the military base and witnessed to him, and he decided that that was a good way to go. And that's exactly what his testimony was. So to justify himself, he attached himself very closely to this preacher when he retired from the military. More often than not, they're preoccupied with their own hobbies, and church is a way to justify their own conscience. They pick and choose which ministries need their attention while telling you that you ought to be involved in all of them to truly work for the Lord. They rely on two or three people to keep the show running and then take the credit for themselves. There are a lot of missionaries I know in the same area where they go to the mission field and they have these people that they plant in these churches to run the churches for them while they go back to the States and get the support, quote unquote. And I've seen that happen as well. So what's happened here? What makes people that way? I mean, what turned the church and the ministry into something that is truly that lucrative? They rejected the truth. But they, in their mind, they're doing something good. Something you have to understand about people is people always want to do something good to help ease their conscience on everything bad that they do. We've come up with this mentality of checks and balances for the human heart, to where if you do one bad thing, you have to do this many good things to outweigh it so that, you know, come the end of the day, when you sit down and you drop your blocks on either side, the good side goes up and the bad side stays, or the good side goes down, the bad side goes up, because the good is heavier than the bad, making you an okay person. So what do you do with somebody when you've presented the truth to them repeatedly, and they know what they have to do with the truth in order to truly be saved, and they want to go that way, but they want to find another way? Men are just as easily deceived by the devil as they are their own heart, because they are truly after the same goal. The devil wishes to deceive you into thinking that you're okay. One thing that really confused me growing up in church is when I was sitting in a service and someone went forward unsure of their salvation, they say it's the devil trying to make you insecure. I never understood that. Because if the devil wanted to make you insecure in your salvation to the point where you search for salvation, that's totally against his mode of operation.
Yeah, he won't do that.
He won't do that.
That's a good point.
If the devil wants to take you to hell with him, like he does as many people as he can, just as he did the angels, why is he making you question your salvation? For all of you who in here who know the word oxymoron, that's the core of it. In reality, verse 4, where they bind heavy burdens and grievous to be borne to these people to make it such a hard, miserable life that you're enduring because you're a Christian, but in reality, you're not doing any of it. You talk a big game, but in reality, you're not doing any of it. You're just, it's all lip service. It's, and when you talk to people, generally, they're not people in your church. They're people out there that you talk and say, this is the Christian life, and I do all this, and all this needs to be done to be right with Christ, and this is what I do, and this is what I give up, because this is what I'd rather be doing. But in reality, in the secrets of their home, they don't do anything they say they're not. They're doing everything they're saying they're not doing. There is no burden. There is no heavy lifting. He won't even, like he says, you have to go out, you have to knock doors and everything, but they never go. You know, they have to live this standard, they have to do this, but they don't. They don't even take a finger and put it to the plow. They don't do anything. They don't work at all, but they tell everybody how hard Christians ought to work. They tell everybody how you ought to live. They tell everybody, but with no evidence of living that way themselves. There is no actions behind those words. It's simply something to make them look better. It's lip service to make them look like that they know what they ought to be doing. They know what needs to be done. They know what a Christian ought to be. And they claim to be it. But they do nothing to act on these words that they know what they ought to do. They know how they ought to act. They know how to believe. But they refuse to do so. Why? Just like in this chapter, it's because they seek the eyes of men in the they seek to impress men with how big of a game that they talk. Because if you say it passionately enough, most people will end up believing that you actually believe that way and think more of you. Because when you go out in public, that's which, how you want to be thought of. That's how you want to be seen. That's how you want to be perceived by men. But in reality, it's a facade because it blows up your pride and makes you feel better. But in reality, you're not doing it at all. Just like these Pharisees were right here. Where they were talking a big game. They were telling you what you ought to do. And Jesus even said, that observe and do, because that is what you ought to be doing. But look at what they do after they say it. We're encouraged several times in the Bible to examine our own lives to make sure we are in the faith. How many times do we talk a big game, but don't live it out? That's a sign of truth rejection. You know what you ought to be doing. You know what you need to be doing. You even know from the Bible why you ought to be doing it. But you refuse to do it because it doesn't fit in with your lifestyle. But you'll say it because it makes everyone think more of you. That's what people are after in this situation. Just like the Bible says, they have to sear their conscience. Because once you've heard the truth, you must reconcile in your mind that you chose yourself over the truth. You chose to keep your kingdom of lust and pride because you would not break down your selfish heart so Jesus could truly be Lord of your life. Because this would not be an issue if Jesus was Lord of your life. How do you reconcile this in your mind? You have to do something with it. You can't just let it sit there and fester because it drives you insane. Sometimes church is used to apply balm to a mind that knows what must be done but chooses to emulate what must be done, thinking that it'll be enough to suffice come judgment day. When in reality, it merely adds more to your charge and you harden your heart with your own good works. Rejecting the truth has more than one effect than just going astray. Sometimes when you know and you reject how it needs to be done, when you reject the process of truth, it hardens your heart with your own good works because that is now your salvation. That is now how you're going to get to heaven, and that is how you know God. And you get to know the wrong God. Number two, they love the church, but more so their position in the church. You'll notice these people in particular, when they choose not to just go off the rails, they infiltrate the church and try and find a position higher than just a Sunday morninger, most times. In verse 7, he says, "And greetings in the markets, and to be called of men, Rabbi, Rabbi." They loved it to go into the market with their robes on and everything because they were to dress a certain way when they went out. They were to talk a certain way when they went out into the markets to shop. They were to treat people a certain way. But really, what they loved, as Jesus said here, was to be called by their title. We didn't come out and say, "What are you doing, Mike?" You said, "What are you doing, Pastor?" And they just love, yeah, Reverend, Father, you know, just all these different titles. That's what they love to be called when they're met in the store. Oh, there's Pastor Mike. There's Father Mike. There's Reverend Mike. You know, they just love that. So what was it that they loved? It was the praise of men for the title they received, because it's just like in a company when you get promoted. And you feel like for that first week before they really start hammering you with responsibility, where you're like, man, I'm a manager now. And it makes you feel really good for a little while. Well, this never, it never wears off, I would suppose, but that's how I feel when I get a promotion. But these good works are usually done in church, in the community, or at a workplace because of their title. They rely on the title, not so much for their salvation, but as a benefit of their good works. They're doing something right because they're youth pastor, they're song leader, they're assistant pastor, they're assistant to the pastor. They don't care. There's a title. They are doorman. They are usher. They are treasurer. They, and just the title is a validation of what they think is right and what they think will get them to heaven is a validation of that. They deserve, they want the praise of men because of their title, because of the stuff that they've done to get there. I've worked with several people who are Sunday church goers and who quickly turned to Sunday church watchers last year. And they are amazing people who, you know, they take initiative, they do their job well, and they are, they are company people. They're here for the company. They don't ask for a raise. They don't do this. They just do their job because they signed the papers and said they work for that company. And it's amazing. However, they also bring that up quite a bit. They bring up that they're the best person in that department. They also bring up that they constantly mention that they do the most, even though you have other good people back there. They do the most work. They've been there the longest. Or if you tell them they need to change something, they don't do it because they already do it very well. Thank you. And they enjoy the title of being the best associate. I mean, it's not even a title. They're just the best person back there. Ask them, they'll tell you, even though they gave it to themselves. And if they truly are, it's often a pain in the manager's side because they constantly remind you of how good they are. And you need to reaffirm them and give them affirmation that they're doing a good job, or they get all depressed because they ride on that emotional high of being the best back there. It's just like I had a youth pastor who, if the teenagers didn't tell him how good his lesson was that Sunday, he fell into this deep depression, and the next week he like cried through the lesson because he wasn't getting through to us. He got through to most people by bringing breakfast. And the next week, he wouldn't bring breakfast, and that really depressed the teenagers. He had to do something to get reaffirmed that he was doing the right thing, that he was there, that, you know, he was the youth pastor. He is like the bee's knees. This is what teens ought to aspire to. He was put here as an example. But in reality, he had Monday blues and Friday happiness mentalities. You have nothing but a mental battle you fight daily about how much good and how much bad that you've done that day. Mental highs and lows because of the high of doing good isn't there all day. Rainy days at work are terrible because stagnant minds do the devil's work. And when you don't have something, when you're not helping people out or making that next sale or staying busy, their minds go still and they go to Facebook or Amazon to try and occupy their minds. And it's the same everywhere, where if you're not doing something constantly, you actually stop and think. And for people with this kind of mindset, where they've rejected the truth and choose to try and occupy their minds with what could be done to get where these other people are going, their minds go idle. And when they go into idle, the devil's work begins. Without a stable soul and a peaceful spirit, the mind is the devil's playground with which to taunt and control you. Depression, anxiety, and unstable nerves are all tools in his toolbox to disrupt lives and continually provide motivation to remain deaf and dumb to the truth. When you succumb to these physical and mental attributes, you're further deafening the truth's call to you. Just like you harden your heart with good works, you stop your ears with surrendering to these mental instabilities that are instituted by the devil to keep you from the truth. Because it's so accepted in this day and age. It is an issue. I understand that. But it is a far more common issue because we popularize it, we publicize it, and we glorify it. Because these people actually have to live with it. When if you had the truth, it'd be so much easier to deal with and live with because of how it deals with it. It's up to you to dare tear down your mental wall and surrender to the truth in order to break through that wall, if you will, of depression and anxiety. I have somebody at work who... That's just a pat answer, an excuse. Anytime that she can't do anything, it's because her anxiety is going crazy. I'm like, you were fine 2 seconds ago. You were telling a joke. And now you don't want to do this, so that's what you're doing. Because we've made it such a public example of you can't say anything about it. You can't say anything about it because they're disabled by it or something. Where you're just surrendering and succumbing to it because... You choose to want to. The truth, as the Bible lays out, gives peace to your soul and soundness to your mind.
Yes.
Both attributes that the truth gives out conquer depression and soothes anxiety. And the reason pills are always going up, the reason pills and the usage of so are always going in is because there's a lack of truth. And there's a popularization of a mental illness that we can give out. In fact, you can even get a check for it nowadays. So again, we're just giving incentive to give in because everyone's mind is so confused because everyone chooses to reject the truth. When the truth is rejected and God is pushed to the side, this condition will exemplify itself. But the only way the church, because you're not supposed to be depressed if you're a Christian, you know, the church goes ahead and doesn't excuse it, but gives you a way to conquer it through doing good works. The confusion goes on from there.
Yeah.
And finally, through all this, what Jesus was saying, he called them hypocrites. And who knows what the principle of a hypocrite is, and that's saying one thing and doing another. But the principle of calling these spiritual leaders hypocrites is much larger than I've ever noticed before, in that hypocrites are generally people who never stop saying one thing and doing another. It's not so much a something you are, it's a condition you have where it's not going to stop being that way. Back in the 1800s, it's something you called somebody who had lived that way for so long that it seemed to the human mind that you weren't ever going to stop being that way. It became part of what you were because, what do they say, old habits die hard. It's just like pushing a camel through the eye of a needle is how impossible it was for them to come to Christ because of how twisted their mind had become, where they had this title. They were at where they were at. They were at the top of the spiritual leaderboard, and so they were fine. They knew the truth. They spoke the truth. Even Jesus said, observe and do, because that is the truth. But they do not do it. And it's become so ingrained in them that they are just hypocrites to where that is what they are. It's more of a title than Pharisee or scribe, hypocrite. They tell them to do this, that, and the other, and they don't do that. But do they understand what they lose because they've forsaken the truth for a truth that they found works better for them? No matter if these people embrace religion or choose a life without any semblance of God, both live a life of servitude to self and whatever the devil puts in their mind. Truth gives a sound mind discernment to the surrendered heart, enabling us to see the world how it ought to be viewed, and that is every minute given to us through the mercy of God and grace enough to make it through anything we may go through. They lose what we hold so dear, and that is the hope that we have in Christ Jesus. The hope that binds us together and sheds lights in our heart is something that is so sought after, but never found by those who know what it would take to get it, but are determined to find another way. Just like where it says that it's like a thief and a robber that try and climb the walls or try and find another way in when there is no other way in. When you read that no man cometh to the Father but by me, and then you figure out what it takes to go through Christ, you either resolve to do what must be done, give up what must be given up, destroy yourself and rebuild on Christ, or you seek another way. And if you seek any other way, you are rejecting the truth in your mind, heart, and soul. I've heard people literally say that they're saved, but radical change was not necessary. In this generation of compatibility tests, 50-50 marriages, and compromising in order to have a relationship, that's all they understand about Christianity and anything at all. The Bible teaches 100% commitment. The Bible teaches not a compatibility test, but be compatible to Christ. Be conformable to Christ. Not compatible, conformable. Not 50-50, 100% devotion. And not compromising, but standing firm in the word of Christ. But if you change that in a society, you effectively remove Christianity in the name of Christ, the ways of Christ, and the word of truth in a society completely. You remove it, because that is not in the word of God. Marriage is a picture of Christ in the church, and if you change that, you change the culture. And it's more of adapting the world's ideas to the idea of the church. What they give up when they reject the truth is something I don't think they fully understand, or at least are blinded to when they choose to reject the truth. Like I said before, rejecting it is not simply going another way. It is totally reforming your life to do anything but conform to Christ. It's doing anything to rule your own life instead of letting Christ rule your life. When you reject it completely, it changes your way of thinking. Because when you choose to go with the truth, when the process of truth, and you totally tear down yourself, which is nothing but a lie to the point of Christ, then you cannot rebuild on truth, but instead rebuild on a truth that you think would work better. Because it's still in the Bible. You still know the Bible. You still do good things. You still do what Christ commanded. But if you do it, like Paul said, outside of Christ, here's a tinkling cymbal or a sounding brass. You're nothing but a noise. Nothing to get attention and draw it to yourself. Because why do you do these good things? Why do you go out and claim Christ? Why do you go out and be a Christian and go to church and tell everyone at church how good of a Christian you are, except to bring attention to yourself and how good you are? To get the praise of man for your title of deacon in the church, for your title of treasurer, for your title of pastor, reverend, father, whatever you decide to call yourself. I'm going to tell you a quick story about a very large church in Poplar Bluff that has a preacher. And I go to work with several of their members. And one guy from work went with one of my coworkers to his church because it's, 5 minutes from his house. So he went out there. And he said, man, he is a good preacher, but I met him out in public one time and he was just terrible to the, he just did that and this and the other. I won't say it because it was terrible. And the member of the church comes up from his office and he heard all this conversation going on. So he just leans up against the desk and goes, yeah, Pastor so-and-so, he's a really good preacher. But I tell you, he's a totally different man in the pulpit than he is outside. He said, man, he said that the whole church had a birthday party for this one guy. And he decided to bring something over because he noticed all the cars. And when he walked in, everyone was shocked because he wasn't invited, because no one wanted him there at this party. He says, so that was embarrassing. He said, but that's kind of the testimony he writes. But he preaches just amazing, and he's in the Word of God, and he knows all this. But it totally negated what he was in the pulpit by what he was outside of the pulpit. Yeah. He says, and this is exact words, when he said, when he walks out of that pulpit, he's a totally other guy. And they excuse it, and here's how he excused it, because of the transforming power of the pulpit, and God's Word's going to get preached no matter what. How can you go to a church where the preacher is a terrible person outside of work? No one even wants him to come to their house. But he's an amazing preacher in the pulpit. Do you think anybody's really getting any truth there? Do you think anybody walking in the door who knows that preacher is going to think anything of God? You are severely disgracing the character of God and nullifying the word of truth by your actions. Because obviously you don't read it outside the pulpit. When you reject the truth, that's just the way you live. Because you are the pastor of that church. And you talk a big game. You tell the people what they need to hear. You tell the people the truth. You tell them and you know how you ought to be living. But you don't live it. Mm-hmm. Because you're the preacher. Obviously you're doing something right because I'm a preacher. So they may need to live that way and this is how they ought to receive the truth, but I must be doing all right. I'm a preacher. I don't need to live by what I've preached. Consequently, most people go to this church are car salesmen. And they get great comfort in that the preacher is that away because they can do what they need to do at work to make a living, God bless them, and then they can go to church on Sunday and be a holy person. I do know some really good people that are car salesmen and go to that church and are just good people all the way around. I mean, they're the same person anywhere you meet them. But it kind of turns me completely off of the kind of church they go to and how they feel about that church because their preacher is not that way. And they recognize it and they know it. And they accept it. And they voted them in. But you know what? They're okay with them because they get what they want from the pulpit. And they can do, the mindset is completely wrong. They get what they want. And they can choose whether to listen to what he said or not because he doesn't live it anyway. So there's no proof in the pudding. So if they don't like it, whatever. Not even the preacher believes it. Just like the Pharisees. When you reject the truth, you lose influence, you lose credibility, you lose your kids, your life, your church, and most importantly, you lose your soul. Yep. You lose control of your soul, you lose control of your mind. The devil has so much play with somebody who believes that they can get to heaven through something else because then they can just throw anything in there and they'll say, hey, now that's an idea. An idea. Remember what we talked about ideas? He was talking about. What have you done with the truth? Do you live by your truth, or have you let truth run its perfect process in your heart? Have you surrendered to the truth, or do you reject it completely, like these Pharisees have, where they taught the truth, they knew the truth, they picked and chose what they wanted to do out of the truth. They knew it was the truth, but they forsook it anyway. For the do as I say, not as I do religion. Nothing is more hypocritical than somebody who chooses to live, go to church, preach the word, and then go do what that preacher does on the other 6 days of the week because he doesn't do Wednesday night services. That's not his place, he said. He gets paid for Wednesday night, I bet. Do not be this way. Do not reject the truth. Examine yourself to see if you have. Have you rejected the truth? Is this the way you live? Do you really have any peace, or do you live on spiritual highs every week? Do you listen to the radio? Do you go searching on YouTube? Do you find preachers that are lesser than you just to make yourself feel better about the good that you do, more so than this other person over here? How do you live your life? Examine that. Do you live it for the truth, or do you live it for your truth? It's an important question.